interacting with the audiences to see how these things affect them, the things that jump out for them that maybe necessarily didn't jump out for me, the conversations that this music starts, which eventually lead to, you know, our communities and our neighborhoods being better because of the conversations that happen inspired by music. That's my purpose. If I can encourage people to connect with people around them through music, then I'll feel like I've done something good and important.
Very important at a time when people are bashing each other with harsh mean words and sounds.
I think it's a huge question. But what's coming to mind first is that I am Indigenous. I'm First Nations from BC. I'm Coggills and Stalo on my dad's side. And I'm also a settler in my mother, English, Irish, Scottish. I have that heritage. And I say heritage because I've never lived in any of those places. I've visited some, but I haven't actually lived there. So although some of that culture came with my grandparents and I've learned some of that. Anyway, my dad went to residential school, as did all my aunts and uncles and my grandparents. And that really cut us off from culture and opportunities and a place, like a voice in society. And I am this incredibly privileged being that was born into a family who gave me everything, every opportunity to learn, every opportunity to avoid racism for as long as possible until I was strong enough to be able to face it. And I have this voice. I keep being given opportunities to share experience, to try new things out. And so I think it is my job to say yes to those opportunities, and in doing so, to gather younger people and other people who are learning new things around me who are like me, to say, you have space too. So to kind of pave that way for more voices to join in that have a similar experience to mine. And so I have a list I keep collecting of a circle of Indigenous musical artists or theatrical artists, and finding ways for us to connect and tell our stories and the stories that we want to tell about ourselves, so that it's not this romantic notion that keeps being placed on who we are. So I guess that's actually a couple of things, but just how being our authentic selves in a public way and creating partnerships with people so that we have safe spaces to be who we really are.
Thank you, Marianne.
Awesome answers from my colleagues here. it is such a huge question. And I think as soon as you said it, I thought, okay, I'm going to come back at it with a different P, which is like, I feel like my purpose is to fulfill my potential. And I think that in the last decade or so, I've sort of recognized that sometimes that potential is artistic, you know, different types of artistic projects that I may have skills in or be able to help make happen. And sometimes it's just within my family or as a friend or something like that. So it's sort of trying to, you know, recognize that it is okay to pause on one part of things if they're fulfilling a potential in another part of your life. So I think that's what I've been learning in the last few years, particularly since the pandemic, I would say.
Thank you, Anne. Each of you have mentioned something that's an element of sharing or training or bringing others along. That connects kind of with the mission of CJSF. It's a college radio station. And rather than bringing, we can bring top 40 music, but being a door through which people can play, send their songs to be listened to by a group that decides it's going on the air, or being able to highlight when there's shows or programs. And also Simon Fraser as a university is a source of communicative of critical thinking as well as contemplative thinking. I think that your purposes align with that. And it's a good thing, because when we talk about the 92 Acts of Reconciliation, they have a specific of saying we're making space, we're saving space, and not just for this group of people, but to make it something that's a part of the heritage of Canada and part of the heritage of wherever a person finds themselves right now. And acknowledge that our work takes place on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh people. Something that someone asked in another interview is like, okay, so when we're getting it back, what do you the creative arts and land acknowledgments of the importance? Do you, when you are playing or talking, acknowledge some of the music or stories that have come from that particular land or territory?
I am very aware of land acknowledgments. I come from culture where we were giving them long before they became a thing to wider society. And it was, it's always been as a way of saying, thank you for having me. I'm really grateful to be here at this ceremony or this feast, this gathering. Here's who I am. Here's how I put myself into context. I'm from this place. And so if you need a witness to anything, you'll know where to find me. And also thank you for hosting me here and acknowledging who it was that did, that made the invite and where you're staying and being given the space to speak. And so that really is what land acknowledgements are for me traditionally. And it is really interesting to watch as organizations across this nation make land acknowledgements and figure out, you know, what they are, what they mean. Should they be recorded? Should they be spoken? Should they involve an in-the-moment thing? And I think all of it, yes, whatever that journey is to remind you of the privilege of those who came here and took land away, started dividing land up instead of sharing and making treaties with each other, because, you know, this might be a better fishing ground and that might be a better hunting ground and this might be a great place to grow food. There were partnerships made with Indigenous tribes right across this nation, anywhere you could get to by water, basically. People were visiting each other and having to work out how you share that space. And another that you referenced land back. And for me, I've learned this actually from my brother, who's I have a sibling council, my two siblings, that we talk a lot and we bounce ideas off each other. And it was my brother who came up with the articulating that land back to us means that we give our respect back to the land. Instead of looking at the land as what can we get from it all the time, what can we give it? And how can we live our lives so that we acknowledge that we are actually part of the earth? We're not these aliens that were flown in to take whatever we want. We're actually part of the earth. And so just reversing our thinking, I think, whatever it means, whether you're giving parcels of land back to different people or whatever, if you give your respect back to the land and it's being treated well, it's more likely that we'll all be able to live here in harmony and we'll all have enough.
I love that.
Thank you for that explanation. Yeah, an explanation. It's an encouragement, because sometimes people argue about the land acknowledgement when you're saying it's thinking about what we can give back to the land. Of course, when people are putting multi-million dollar structures on something, they're not talking about giving back this corner of Vancouver that's got all these structures. That idea of giving back something of yourself and something that helps forward our communications and the way we treat each other, that was wonderful. Thank you.
And I like to, you know, I'm going to acknowledge I want a roof over my head and a floor under my feet. Like, I'm not that we have to go back to nature and live like the hippies of the 80s would have told us to, but that we acknowledge what we are as humans, what we are doing, and do it in balance.
One of the third P around what are you passionate about? Are you involved in mentoring, or do you have students that ask to get involved in things like the opera that you are producing now or working on?
Yeah, one of the I'm glad you asked that question, because one of the great aspects of this show is that our five chorus members, solo voices that make up this terrific chorus, they're all students. They're from the UBC Opera program. And they're all, I mean, I think it's been demonstrated to us that they have great potential to go on and have amazing careers of their own. But they're just starting out, you know, they're still in school. In fact, they're running from rehearsals at school to rehearsals here and back. They're working probably harder than any of us. And we just love them. They're fantastic. And so to have that kind of energy come into the room and to whatever bits that we've picked up along our path, because we've been doing it longer, passing it on to them, I think is it's very important to us. I think all of us probably can think about the people in our lives when we were young that passed things on. So it feels like a great privilege and a responsibility, I guess, to also give a little bit to the folks who are coming in after us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm pretty passionate about passing on, you know, what I can, just because I'm passionate about directing and about opera and about theater and everything. So I also teach directing with a college in Ontario and really enjoy doing that. And coincidentally, at one time, Gord was a student of mine.
It's true.
I was very young. Yeah. And just to go back to the UBC students, like when I heard their voices on the first day, I was blown away. Like I didn't really know what we would face with, you know, five students, but they are phenomenal musicians and really we're sort of seeing the next gen of opera in Canada with those five young people. Their voices, I can see them already making big strides or big marks on Canadian opera.
Yeah. And they're so quick. I'm reminded of like how much better my memory was all those years ago. And also they're so enthusiastic and so caring as colleagues. They're really helping me to remember where I'm supposed to be. And they just give me that youthful energy. It makes me feel less old. And it's really fun to work with them, honestly. They're wonderful colleagues. And I would say not just to focus on the students, but that this cast, and I mean the people behind the scenes, the designers, the lighting, the stage management, directorship, and performers, and the instrumentalists when they arrive. We have a pianist that we work with until the week of. And so the pianist is in the room as well. We're all at different stages. We're all at different ages. And that's what makes up a community. If we were all the same, you know, we wouldn't necessarily have our different life stages to offer to each other. And it's so important for me as someone who's like on the older end, but a little bit feeling in the middle, that to have in both directions in that circle, like lessons from what people are going through in their stages of life.
Yeah, I'm happy that you've expressed your passion and your interest and availability to students, because the typical movies or context that's given is that it's just snobbish people. They don't want to be bothered with students. They cut off access. But would you say, is there a time after the show has finished that you're in the lobby or in areas where someone wanted to come and say hello to you? Are you accessible after the show?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I think I mentioned before, we're actually going to have a sort of talk back session after each show. So people in the audience are we hope actually will stick around and chat with us, ask questions, give us thoughts on what they saw and what they experienced. But certainly also it doesn't need to even be that formal if it's, you know, just a moment in the lobby. I do really, really love those moments of, you know, what did you think of this? Even if you didn't like it, tell me. I want to know what this was for you. And I always love coming across people who aren't too shy to do that, because I think also they see, oh, well, this person's, you know, important or whatever, and I shouldn't say. But I always want to hear, what do you think of all that?
Me too. I love meeting people who have been in the audience. I love being in the audience. So making that connection is a very important part of this work.
Yeah. And as a director, like we are always the only director in the room, and Gord would always be the only conductor in the room. So if anyone ever approaches me and says, Anne, I'd love to learn about directing, I'm usually all over that. Like, let's figure out how we can either get you in a rehearsal hall if it's not mine, it's someone else's, or have a coffee and just talk about the steps you can take, because it's not like you can sit at, well, there are classes for directing. I teach one, but but when you're actually doing it, do you know, it's nice to be able to welcome young people into the rehearsal hall. So yeah, I love it when people reach out. Sometimes it's through Facebook or Instagram, or you know, they dig up my email somehow, or in a lobby. And it has happened where people come up to me in a lobby and say, you know, I just want to have a coffee with you at some point, and or can I send you my resume or something? And then we have a chat, and sure enough, 2 or 3 years later, we're working together. And it's pretty awesome how that happens with the little web of connections that we can make through these chance occasions.
And just in the few weeks that this production takes place, Gordon, as the director of the company, has opened the doors to certain people to come in and watch a rehearsal. And that is good for us, both in that we are able to converse with them right there and then. We had a kid there the other day who was just all agog. And it's so nice to see that curiosity. It helps to push us over, to push us to perform better and with more integrity, I think. And it's just interesting. It's part of the community to have them in there while we're still growing the piece, as it were.
And I'm not sure if, but Vlad, our design sort of head of design for this project, has brought on, he's at SMU, and he's brought on Kata Yoon and Alex, lighting designer and projection sort of designer, who, when I had my first meeting with Kata Yoon and Alex, they were like, how are you doing? And I realized that they had been students together before, but now they're both working professionally. And so it is that kind of passing on of knowledge and building of, you know, and people entering their careers and beginning to work and then work with each other again, too. So, yeah, we've got good representation from SFU.
Mm-hmm. We have confirmation that directors, lead vocalists, researchers do welcome students, and there is a way to contact. Now, with the C, you know, I said we had three P's, but two C's. One of them you started to talk about, which is contact. Do you have a way that you could share, that each of you could share, of how people would contact you?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's either people can go to the cityofforvancouver.com website and you can send me an email through that, or people are very welcome to visit my own site, which is just my full name, gordongerard.com, and people can send emails that way as well.
Do you mind spelling that, Gordon?
I'm sorry?
Mind spelling that?
Yeah, so it's Gordon. GERRARD.com.
Thank you. Marian?
Yeah, I have a website. It's mariannewman.com, and that's MARIONNEWMAN. And that's for performance stuff. There is an address there to reach out to me. And I'm also on social media, which I actually made my address for social media before I knew that it was going to be for more than just my family. So it's a childhood nickname, but it is Miss Prill, MISSPRILL at Facebook, at Instagram, and those are the two that I use the most.
I don't have a website. I actually have a website, but I have not launched it.
I've been there for a long time.
But Facebook, I mean, I'm the Anne. There's lots of Anne Hodges out there in the world, but I'm the one that looks like my little photo that would be in the program or on the website. But through Gord, people could reach me. I also have an agency. Like, I'm with Talent House and Dean Artists, which is another way. If people, those are the sort of theater and opera agents that I deal with. So if people needed to reach me, that is a way that they could reach me as well.
Could you mention those two again, please?
Sure. Talent House. So, and I think it's talenthouse.ca. And then Dean Artists is sort of the sister agency that deals with opera. I think it's just deanartists.ca, but don't quote me on that. But you could Google Dean Artists, and then my agent would pop up, or my little portfolio would pop up too. Mm-hmm.
And now the other C was causes. You talked about in the flashback how how many causes and events Mrs. Eberhardt was involved in. What is causes? Is there any particular cause that each of you are involved in?
That's a good question. I spend most of my waking hours trying to keep, I am the artistic head of two different organizations. One is City Opera Vancouver, which we've been talking about today. The other one is the Regina Symphony Orchestra. So I spend most of my waking hours trying to keep those two organizations afloat, which is in this sort of post-pandemic period or whatever we are, is a challenge. So I think my causes are all tied in with keeping music alive in this country.
Yeah, and actually during the pandemic, when performance opportunities went quiet for quite a while, I answered the call that a lot of companies had already been making to talk about equity, diversity, and inclusion with the whole musical community. And part of that was through the Canadian Music Center as a body of music that Canadian composers have created that contains appropriated Indigenous song in it. And so one of them has been to figure out what to do with that music, how to categorize what is appropriation and what permissions there were in place, how those pieces can be performed. And of course, all of this occurred when the needle wasn't where it is now. So I'm not trying to throw shade on people who did that because they thought they were doing the right thing. And they thought that Indigenous song was all just folk songs. And so it wouldn't necessarily have meaning, but it is emerging that there are reasons for songs. There are times for songs to be sung, and there are songs that should only be sung by family members, etc. So helping share what those rules are, they change from nation to nation. And so I can only represent my own, but I've been learning that and helping to guide along with a whole team of colleagues, what to do with that body of music and how to bring some of it to the light that hasn't been performed that could be, and how to do that in the appropriate ways.
Yeah, I would say, like, formally, the causes that I sort of participate in, I'm on a board for the Manitoba Association of Playwrights. I'm the chair of the board there, which is a service organization that supports new playwriting, and that includes musicals. So far, I don't think it includes opera, but theater as writers. So I'm on the board for that. And I would say a lot of my sort of causes happen through my teaching. Like me, I have a co-teacher, two co-teachers, where we're teaching artistic leaders. I teach directing and they teach music directing and choreography. And we really sort of share this belief that we can, through the young people, change how theater is created. And I include opera in that. And the way that we run a rehearsal room, principles of equity and inclusion, et cetera. So I feel like that's where I get very passionate through building the curriculum and passing it on in my courses there. And then just, like I sort of hinted at earlier, sometimes I used to do pet therapy with my dog. I have a little dog and we would visit a seniors center and do that once a week, but he's old now and it kind of stopped during the pandemic. But I feel like one of my major causes right now is just my aging family members. My parents are, they take a lot of time, but it's a cause that I really am invested in because I love them and I want to spend these final years with them as much as I can. So. Mm-hmm.
So now you've heard it here on CJSF, the Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon show, that yes, it is. Here are three people who are very busy, very involved in their creativity, yet still have time to get involved with causes. And anyone that tells you, oh, if you're building your career, stay away from causes, here is just an example of no, there are rich opportunities. And it is so important for music to be spread and to people find out and feel you don't have to be stuck with just one genre, that it's important to learn about different cultures and learn about different styles. And now this different style of opera, this contemporary opera. So I want to thank you all for sharing your information and your enthusiasm with me this morning and look forward to going to the play. I mean, not to the play.
We do that all the time.
Thank you so much for your warm welcome and your terrific questions.
Yes.
This has been really lovely.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much. It's been nice to meet you.
Thank you.
We are going to be checking with you about some music, little bits that we can play throughout this as we have a few station breaks within the program.
Perfect. Okay. Awesome.
Anything you want to recommend, you could put it in the chat. That chat is working, right? You can put it in the chat.
Okay. We can send you, there's a recording of the opera that's available on Spotify or Apple Music or whatever. So we can probably just choose a couple of little things that would be a nice taste for people to hear.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that would be wonderful.
Great.
Cool.
So this is Friday at 10. I want to welcome you to come again next week. I'm Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here at the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby on the Mountain, and streaming worldwide at cjsf.ca. I said I'll see you next week at 10, but when people ask me what time it is, I say it's always love time poems.
Love time.
Yes.
Poem time.
Well, for that.
Love time. Poem time. Love time. Poem time. Time for words from heaven to shine. Love time. Poem time. Time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time. Poem time. Time for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes, and play bassoon. Love time. Poem time. Time for poems, poets, and singers. Time to untie all life's ringers. Poem time. Love time. Time for you to reveal to me. Unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace. Rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words. Place for love instead of swords. Love time. Love time. Love time. Poem time. Times for words from heaven to shine. Love time. Poem time. Time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time. Poem time. Times for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes, and play bassoon. Love time. Poem time. Poem time. Love time. Time for poems, poets, singers. Time to untie all life's ringers. Time for you to reveal to me, unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace, rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words, place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time, poem time, love time, love time, poem time, poem time, love time.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
This is Bird Note. Though most birds that enliven beaches in summer have gone south, tiny sandpipers called sanderlings are easy to find on winter shores. They're intensely busy birds, persistently following the smallest waves as they lap in and out. High tide pushes burrowing invertebrates closer to the surface of the sand. As the waves retreat, the top layer of sand swirls loosely. Sanderlings rush in to probe the sand with their small but tough beaks, then flee as the next wave breaks. The diversity of sanderlings' diet is impressive. Various small crustaceans, especially mole crabs, isopods, and amphipods, are important elements. A sanderling's probing also yields miniature clams and bristly, segmented polychaete worms. In spring on Delaware Bay, horseshoe crab eggs are a vital food. And a sanderling's dining options don't end there. They chase invertebrates through shallow pools and pluck flying insects out of the air. In a pinch, they can turn to plants, buds, seeds, and algae. But they're best known for that elegant dance at the edge of the waves. Watch for them performing along most of the U.S. coast, from city shorelines to barrier islands. For BirdNote, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
Dear listeners, as you may have heard, Meta, which owns Instagram and Facebook, is blocking Canadian access to all content created by news providers, including this radio station, in response to the Online Broadcasting Act. Access to local news and information matters to everyone, and while radio stations use their airwaves to keep you informed, we also use social media to share local news, events, and initiatives, and even content about our upcoming programming. We need you to write your MP and convey your concerns. Learn more and find a letter template for your MP on our website. Thank you for your support.